Ugh, spam calls. Sound familiar? Introducing Line 2. Get a second phone number right on your existing phone. Imagine discounts, appointments, online forms. Handle it all without giving out your personal number. It's like having a secret weapon against spam. And when those unwanted calls sneak through, boom, blocked. No more interruptions, no more stress. Stay connected, stay protected. Keep your main number safe and out of harm's way. Ready to take back your phone? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to our podcast. I'm Greg.
And I'm Veronica.
And this is the Wheel of Time cast.
This week, we're covering the Wheel of Time, Season 2, Episode 4, Daughter of the Night.
All right. So, Daughter of the Night was, I had an idea of what to expect, but I thought it was a good title. How about you hit us with that Amazon summary?
So the very informative Amazon summary this week is Moraine searches for Rand while Nynaeve mourns her losses.
So in all honesty, I didn't pick up that Moiraine was looking for Rand when she showed up in Hyrene, which is, I absolutely called it Carhine for 20 years. They gave me something that I had not realized until probably a good 15-20 minutes into the episode, until she started asking about the redheaded boy. How'd you like it overall?
Yeah, I thought it was good. I didn't know what Daughter of the Night meant, and so until the very end, I spent the whole episode wondering, is it this person? Is it this person? Is it this person? So it was kind of fun. I continue to be really pleased with the pacing. I feel like we're getting interesting mysteries and reveals pretty much every episode. So
yeah, this one was super dense. I mean, I guess the last few have all been just a lot of story in one episode. It does very much remind me of Game of Thrones, where they're going from place to place, but they're still spending a significant period of time with most of the characters. We didn't get a ton of Perrin or Matt this week, but we got some interesting things.
Absolutely.
All right. So let's start off with your three questions. What do we got?
Okay. Number one. So my non-book reader question is, can you tell us more about the different ways that a bond between an Aes Sedai and a warder are broken, or I guess they can either be severed or masked? How often does this type of thing happen with warders and Aes Sedai, and what is the significance between the different ways they're able to do it?
Okay, so the bond is the same bond, maybe slightly different from Aes Sedai to Aes Sedai, but just the weaves, but the weave is basically the same. And it is, put into a warder, and it lets them share thoughts, feelings, maybe not thoughts, but, feelings with their Aes Sedai, or rather with their warder. It also gives the warder, extended strength. It kind of extends, I think, a little bit of the slowing of aging.
That's
the way that I'm familiar with how to bond. How a bond can be broken, there's a little bit different. So the things that we've heard are a bond, we saw it in season one when the Aes Sedai was killed and her warder killed himself. So that was just flat out, it was ripped from you, right? It was your Aes Sedai, it was there in full force. You sensed terror, and then you felt her pain as she died, and you shared in that. That's almost like a mind meld, except it's more like an emotional meld. and then you, that's, you know, ripped away from you. Masked is kind of like, you almost like put a cloth over it. Almost like putting a cloth over a camera, right? You may still feel small bits and pieces if they have especially strong emotion or something like that. You can feel something, but it's muffled. Mm-hmm. I think that it is a matter of the like when an Aes Sedai is severed or stilled. All right, so the last one kind of that we are talking about is where what's a little weird about lands is that it was masked, so he didn't have all those senses and whatnot, and then she was cut off from the source. And so I think you might still have that sense of loss, but it's not that sense of trauma per se.
Okay.
Like the mast, you know, it's going to come back. You can still feel that someone is there, but it's not, you know, but you don't have that full force. And then if you lose that again, that you lose something, but you don't, it's not that, like I said, it's not as traumatic.
That makes sense. So in the event that Moraine suddenly had her power restored, is that bond still intact once that's reinstated, or would it be severed?
That is an excellent question. Okay. I have no idea.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. This is my second question. We'll move on, but it's still related. So can an Aes Sedai take on as many warders as they want, or is Alana's situation very, very unique? And is there a limit? Like, could she take, I know everyone was joking about a third. Could she, is that allowed? Are there rules around this?
I imagine, like, it is not specifically stated, like, you shall only have whatever. It's basically, what can you handle? And so I think that you could have upwards of, you know, a half dozen warders. There were Aes Sedai in the books that had multiple warders, typically of the Green Aja, and they were known as like the Battle Aja. So it would make sense that they would have the most protection and most support. I don't know if necessarily know if there are rules, but I don't think that Alana is super unique.
Okay. All right. I'm sort of torn on my last one. I have two options, but I feel like both of them, your answer is probably going to be that you can't tell me a whole lot. I'll go with this one. So I think just like we've seen some of it, but if you as a book reader can at least summarize without spoiling anything, sort of the significance of the town of, I've been calling it Qarhaan too. It's, how do we say it?
Kyrene.
Kyrene. Okay. So what is the significance of this town? Obviously, we've seen a little peek into it, but can you put that all together for me and help me understand how this town sort of is looked at across this whole world?
Sure. So Kyrene is, it's the capital city. It's not a town.
Okay.
What we have seen is the different places that we've seen the Foregate, right? That's what like the announcement was at the beginning of last episode. It says the Foregate. The Foregate is like basically outside of the fortified walls.
Okay.
And then on the inside, that's where you have like streets and merchants and businesses and taverns and all that. And then you would have like the palace where the queen lives. So Kyrene is the capital city of the country of Kyrene.
Okay.
So we've talked about different countries. So there's Kyrene, there is Andor, there is Ibudar is a city, Arad Duman, there's Tyr. there is Shianar, which we saw in season one.
Right.
There's Ilyan. So we kind of went through a list of them, you know, earlier on this season. But yeah, Kyrene is the capital city of a country. So okay. We have not seen a ton of that. We've seen a few places. We've seen where the nobles, you know, are having a party and the Foregate. But other than that, Moiraine's sister mentioned that her son was marrying the queen.
You're right.
And so that's like in that city.
Okay. Yeah, I heard that mention, and I think I didn't realize this was the capital city and didn't have the placement of like, is the queen here or is this somewhere else she's going? So that was helpful. I'm glad that's the question I went with. So yeah, those were my three questions.
Okay. Awesome. All right. Well, let's go ahead and take a little break, and then we will get into our points.
All right. And welcome back, everybody. Hey, Greg, want to start getting into our top three highlights?
For sure. All right. So you good if I go first?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, cool. All right. Well, I am going to, I'm going to go with one of those reveals that you were talking about. This is a very dense episode with a bunch of different kind of storylines, but I'm just going to say Leandrin is like, we knew she was hard. We knew she was, we knew she was kind of like, okay, kind of bitchy. But we didn't know she was a dark friend, and we didn't know that she was working for the shadow. And the reveal that she has basically delivered Min and Matt to Ishmael, that was pretty crazy. And I thought it was well done. And that actually kind of ties into the Min point, like into the Min storyline, in that, oh, Min's doing this, I won't let you hurt Matt, but she's doing it to get rid of her voices, her curse of vision, because she was taken advantage of when she was a child, and just forced to look and see and basically be tortured by other people's ill fortune or futures. I liked how it was done. Leandrin was very much kind of in the background of a lot of scenes, and then, you know, she sits Nynaeve down, and you're like, oh man, she's like giving her good advice, and take what, you know, find a piece of this world that is yours and hold on to it, and when it's gone, find another. And you really start to have kind of empathy for her, and you understand kind of the curse of the Aes Sedai as far as living for long periods of time. We talked about a couple weeks ago when Nynaeve discovered Leandrin's son. You're like, oh man, I like kind of feel bad for her. And you know, you find, I can't remember the order, but I believe that we find out that Min has been delivered to Ishmael, and immediately following that, she takes out Nynaeve, Egwene, and Elaine. And now you're like, oh shit. Now if you go back and you watch her talking about it, there's almost like a longing. There's a pain there that she wants to, that it feels like she wants to lift or relieve. And so I thought that her being her as the villain, and Kate Fleetwood, I think, is doing a very good job of embodying that. The very heavy is the heart that has to pay the piper. And she honestly seemed sorry that she was having to do this to Nynaeve. Maybe not the other two. The fact that she was like, oh, daughter heir of Andor, you're a complication. Whatever.
I was not expecting it, and I still sort of left like just a little confused. Like, I didn't feel, she's obviously acting as a dark friend, but I still just didn't know if I fully understood her long game. Like, is this a means to an end different than what seems sort of obvious? Like, you know, her partnering with Ishmael makes it seem very clear that she's a dark friend and sort of on a different side.
But did she know that it was Ishmael? Did she know that it's one of the Forsaken?
I hadn't even thought of that. I guess I was thinking of like, maybe she has a long game where she's sort of using him you know, as a double cross, I didn't even think about the fact that he, you know, could misrepresent himself as well. I was trying to wrap my head around, why was she so concerned with helping Nynaeve progress through the arches and so upset when she didn't? Was that true? Was that a show? It seemed like she was distraught even when no one was watching.
Knowing what we know now, we know that at the beginning of the season, there was a meeting talking about, you know, between Dark Friends and the Forsaken, or whoever was in that room, and they were talking about Rand. And so they know Rand's name, which means they probably know their traveling or his traveling companions. So maybe Nynaeve and Egwene could be used as bait to lure Rand in somewhere. Maybe.
Well, that makes sense, but why help her progress through the arches? Like, why not do that while they were novices? Because it made it easier for her to leave?
Yeah, because she couldn't leave the tower until she was accepted. And she couldn't, and Liandrin wasn't allowed to teach her until she was accepted. So it was, hey, let's get her to the point where I can have influence over her, give her some what feels like heartfelt advice, and then drop this bomb of, oh, hey, this happened. So, you know, don't do anything rash, but here's this horrible thing that's happening to your friends. I think that she intentionally, she told Nynaeve that with the thought that she would use the secret passage that she's, you know, that she followed the Liandrin out of, and that she would probably get Egwene and bring, you know, head out towards the Two Rivers. And so she was able to ambush them in that particular spot.
Interesting. Still seems like she probably could have shown them both the secret way out, but I guess she had to build that trust with Nynaeve for Nynaeve to believe her when she was telling her about friends being captured. And I guess the friends really were captured, so she also needed to wait on opportunity, but I don't know, it just seemed like a convoluted path to getting there, but...
I get what you're saying. Like, it does seem like, well, as long as this and this and this and this all happen, then I'll be good to go.
Yeah.
I do wonder where or whom she is taking them to, though. Or even how she's going to get them out of the tower. Like, they're out of the tower, per se, but, I mean... Does she have like a group of people is she going to channel them, you know, through the town, through Tarvalon?
Yeah.
Maybe she puts them on a little cart and carts them around.
That's very interesting. Curious to see that play out.
All right. So what's your first point?
Well, you stole my first point, which I had called Trixie Liandrin. But so I'll go on to my next, I'll skip to the next one. So one thing that I really was enjoying this episode, and I think I had just complained about it an episode or two ago, that I needed more backstory on Moiraine. And we did start to get that. It's still very muddy. We just got little hints of things that gave us clues about her. But it was much more than we've had this far. And so I think, you know, one of the things that Alana said to Lan when she was talking, or Lan when she was talking to him, was she referenced something that happened 20 years ago. And I wish you had known Moiraine before whatever it was happened.
Right.
And so insinuating that she, you know, something changed her from water to ice 20 years ago. And so we don't know what that was. But that was interesting to get that and to realize, you know, that even Lan is very unaware of a lot of Moiraine. But then the other big piece of this episode that gave us so much insight into her was meeting her younger, older sister, Anvair, who has, you know, significantly outaged her at this point. And at first, you know, you spend the episode sort of feeling pretty sad for Anvair. You know, her reaction is pretty shocked at Moiraine just showing up, and
right. She
seems pretty hurt and very much like Moiraine has kind of all the power in their relationship. But then, you know, by the end, she realizes or reveals to the audience and to Moiraine that she actually does have you know, some power and some pride herself that she's going to show. And so, you know, she reveals that, you know, their uncle apparently did something that ruined their very wealthy, prominent family. And around that same time, Moiraine left to go off to train to become an Aes Sedai. And it seems like several of the family members sort of expected Moiraine might come back to rescue them, and she never showed. And so there's a lot of bitterness. Moiraine sort of tries to defend herself and say she wasn't able to come back, and her sister cuts her off. It's like, I don't want to hear it. Like, absolutely, you could have come back. It does seem like maybe Moiraine wasn't completely aware of quite how dire the situation had gotten for them. I mean, her sister references begging, you know, for scraps of food left over from parties and things. But I thought it was pretty, you know, powerful when she stands up to her and says, like, this is not your home anymore. You don't get to just come parade in here and use us and then leave again after you sort of left us flat. And, you know, my son's going to marry the queen and you're not going to mess this up for me. Like, I've fixed it without you. You don't get to come back here. So, you know, I really just found all that interesting, and I still want to know more about her. I want to know why she didn't go back and what it was that happened 20 years ago that really changed things for her. But yeah, I was pleasantly surprised that, I guess if I complain about it, they will show it to me. So go with that. I think the only other really, the thing I literally like laughed out loud about is that when Moiraine first, you know, barges into the house and she's like, look, I want to keep a low profile. Like, I'm not here. You know, I need to go run these errands, and that's it. And the next thing you know, she is parading around town with all her jewels on in this like ridiculous, giant, blue, vibrant blue dress. I'm like, how is this keeping a low profile? Like, you are announcing to everyone that you are here. And, you know, it's like, it was supposed to be this big reveal that her sister knew everything that she'd been up to because she's got spies. And, you know, that was sort of this power play of like, hey, I kind of, you know, I'm back to running this town. I know what's going on. But I was sort of like, would it really have been that hard to know where she was going? Like, anybody was going to spot this previously very prominent woman who is a well-known Aes Sedai and is traipsing about in this ridiculously fine dress. So I found that kind of funny.
So I will defend that a little bit. And the reason I will defend it is that it's been decades. No one knows what Moiraine looks like unless she, you know, I mean, unless she looks the same as she did, you know, a couple of decades ago. And there are nobility who will go around and ask things, and she can say that her, you know, she is a noble woman or something like that. We didn't necessarily get that, but it is, now that you point it out, it is kind of funny that I want to keep a low profile. Oh, wait, I need to order a dress from this person and get this and that and whatever. Yeah, no, that's a good point. So one of the things about Anvir was that she was the one who actually spoke to Rand about the Game of Houses last mm-hmm. episode. And so to think that Moiraine's sister was the one who provided him some sort of guidance into the Game of the Houses, I was glad to see that character again, because I thought that the actor did well.
I agree, and I think I was slightly annoyed last week at that whole scene. It just felt like they were really drawing out the storyline of getting the wine. And so then it made me feel like, well, let me stick my foot in my mouth a little bit, because they were obviously setting us up for introing to this character and what being high society in this town really means. And it sort of gave more weight to things that happened this week, as well as just, you know, gave us a little bit of insight into this character. So, yeah, I was actually pretty pleasantly surprised to see her again, and very surprised to find out, you know, who she was.
Yeah, it was. I thought it was well put together. Anything else?
No, I think that got it for that piece.
All right. So point number two. All right. Well, I'll go ahead and hit up. I mean, like I said, I I think I'm going to save the best for last, right? So what I think of as the best. So I'll talk about Lan and going out to wherever Alana is from and wherever her family is. So based on Moiraine's sister's, you know, relationship with her sister and how much older her sister looks, I don't know, like, how different in age Alana is. Like, where was that woman and man? Was that her daughter? Was it her sister? Was it a niece or a, you know, an aunt? Or I mean, I guess not aunt, but yeah, I just didn't know where they all fit together. But it did. I liked the concept of the family dinners and whatnot. I was a little confused because they flashed from Nynaeve, like looking off into the distance, and then you see Lan, and I was like, is this her flashing back to like in the arches? And then you see Maxim and Ivan, and again, it took me a few seconds to be like, wait, is this back like in her imagination or in the arches? Oh wait, no, this is, oh right, because Lan's with Alana and her warders.
Everything just felt a little like bright and happy, though. I know what you mean. It felt like almost too happy. That also made me sort of question.
It was like we were in the Shire, and yeah. There was it was very, very much cheerful, happy family setting, which was just weird. So Alana and her family, very sassy. Where are you going to put the third water? And you're like, whoa, that's a little fresh there. I did find it interesting that Alana, you know, Lan has the other warders who follow him around, and every time he goes to literally to take a pee, he's got a couple dudes, or one of a couple dudes following him around and making sure that he's not going to hurt himself. So then Alana comes and says, you know what, we're not gonna, like, basically what's happened is I've used the boys to soften you up so that I can come in and just basically punch you in the face. So he's basically like, hey, we're going to the tower. Nynaeve is going through the arches. She's going to be looking for a warder soon. Oh, which, you know, as you mentioned earlier, you know, 20 years ago, you know, I wish you'd known Moiraine before that. I did find that, like, Maxim was giving him advice by the well, and then Ivan was giving him advice while, like, during meditation. It all kind of just came back to the same thing. It's like, follow your heart. And by your heart, I mean, what your sense of purpose. You know, Lan was obviously very, I'm not going to repeat my past failures, so I'm not going to go to Nynaeve and try to connect with her. The last thing, you know, right before, you know, the big reveal at the end was them finding the poem that Bael Doman had given to Moiraine, and then Lan had subsequently stolen. I'll read it when we get to that. I have most of it here. Yeah, I did enjoy Lan's story, and we have a little bit, you know, some stuff about Lan's character in this particular episode. It seemed very similar to how it seemed like he was in Nynaeve's vision, a little bit lighter of foot and less burdened, and
he's got his hair down.
Literally. Yeah. So that was my number two.
I really loved some of the quotes as they were giving him advice. I thought Maxim, his quote of, have you ever known a marriage that is exactly the same as another? Basically just like everybody can sort of work out and negotiate what's right for them. And I thought that was good advice.
Yeah.
And then Yvonne, calls out that Lan is taking 1,000 cuts for her one, because he keeps replaying that insult in his head. And I thought, I mean, I know I definitely do that kind of thing too. And his next line was, people don't understand that the quiet ones are quiet because the conversation is always playing out in our own heads. I just thought, yeah, I feel like many of these episodes I'm writing down like multiple quotes that people say. I'm curious if there are things that you ever notice that they pull directly from the book, or if this is all unique, but it's stuff that feels like, oh, I want to write that down. Like, I want to remember that little quote.
There are lines. I believe actually Blood Calls Blood is a chapter title. So like I think that there are lines that are ripped directly from the book.
It's
But I mean
interesting that you called
it's
out
well
Blood
done.
Calls Blood. That's actually, I wrote it down and put it up on my wall because it really stuck with me. No, I'm just kidding.
I there are lines, like I said, there are lines that are pulled directly out of the book, but I do think that I really think that the writers have done a really good job in presenting not only the information, and the actors have done a great job in presenting it, but the lines and the presentation really kind of gives an insight into each person's character. I'm not going to say that this is a really quotable show, but there are definitely lines that kind of resound to me.
Yeah, totally.
All right, what do you got for your next one?
So my next one, I am going to jump to Perrin and finding out that he is a wolf brother. Which again, that's I keep complaining about stuff, so that will just hurry up and get to the reveal. But I was pretty satisfied that at least, we had it confirmed that he's not going to warg into a wolf. He's a wolf brother, which means he can, communicate through these visions with wolves. And I think Elias was sort of coaching him through it. And he started out by saying, "I am them, and so are you." When Perrin was questioning him, kind of like, "Who's following who? Are we following the wolves? Do they know where they're going? Do we know where they're going?"
Right.
And Elias basically like revealing, like, "Yeah, we're all moving together." And so then we see a little bit of what those visions look like that the wolves are able to communicate. And we also find out that Perrin has, without his awareness, been sharing his dream visions with Elias and the pack. Or is it Elias?
I
Elias?
call him Elias,
Okay, Elias.
just because that's how I read it.
They know a lot about him more than he knows about them because he's been sharing a lot with them. We find out that they we knew the wolves came and saved him from the white, is it the white cloaks? Yeah, the white cloaks. But I don't think we knew until this episode that Elias was with them and kind of running that, and that they'd been following him for a long time. And we also found out that they have to be really careful around the Aes Sedai, that the Aes Sedai are suspicious because they maybe don't fully understand them. I'm sure we'll, continue to reveal more about that relationship as episodes go on. But I was just excited to finally see, I think I'm excited to see Perrin finally getting some answers and go into this. I still go back to, I guess it was last episode, Ishael telling him that, kind of the more beast-like you become, the more you belong to me. And so I guess there is danger in Perrin going down this path, but I think I feel hope that he'll be able to navigate that appropriately. So
Yeah,
we'll see.
I think that once he not just accepts it, but like kind of becomes it. One of the cool things that I did like about this type of storyline, like this whole concept in the books, was that so he interpreted that the wolf's name was Hopper, and hey, he'll show you when he's ready. And Hopper is in the book, and they communicate not just in like visions. It's more like in senses. So it's like what's this one wolf's name. It's hard to like it doesn't you can't really put it in words. It's more like or the feeling of dew on the morning grass on a
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Want to keep your personal number private but still stay connected? With Line 2, you can get a second phone line right on your device with a super simple app and no need for another phone. Whether it's for online shopping, dating, or shielding your main number from spam, Line 2 is an easy way to manage it all. Ready for peace of mind without breaking the bank? Call, text, block, and more for only $9.99. Get started with line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in any app store today. Line 2, your second line simplified.
Day of summer, and like it's very kind of poetic. It's like, you know, this one, oh, Hopper, okay, he's you know, the wolf's jumping around, okay, that's cool. That was something that I really did appreciate in the books, and I think they're doing a decent job, although we haven't spent a ton of time with the wolves or Perrin. I'm looking forward to getting more of that storyline.
Yeah, I mean, that must be a hard thing to try to figure out how to convert that sort of scenario appear on the screen. Mm-hmm. I hadn't really thought about what a challenge that must have been for them to try to come up with that and still be able to represent sort of what you said of, like, you know, and I think that came across of, like, when he called him Hopper and Elias was sort of like, well, close enough, but I think you sort of got that it's like, it's about the interpretation, and I think he said it's a lot of instinct of
figuring it out. It's not Hopper per se, but it's like the feeling of always, you know, the joy and how good it feels to fly through the air and all. I thought it was good.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. I've just recently been watching, started following an Instagram account of a woman that teaches her dogs to speak using buttons. And so I've been thinking a lot just about, like, communicating with dogs and how, like, with my dog, you know, I know what a word means. I say, do you want to see? And to him, he thinks that means, like, I think if I say you want to see or you want to look, he thinks that means go specifically look out a window. And just, like, the complicated sort of translation, not even just from, like, one human language to another, but like trying to get a dog to understand what a human word means. And so it was sort of interesting then to watch this episode and see a different way of, obviously a supernatural way, but just something in line with something I've been thinking about in my real life about, you know, interesting ways of communicating and how interpretations can sort of vary. But I don't know, that's a little bit of a tangent. You can take it out if you want to.
Nope, that's staying in. All right. I'm looking forward to more Perrin and that storyline.
Yep.
Okay. So I could talk about Egwene and Elaine, but I'm not going to. What I'm going to do is I'm going to let you take the big one. I'm going to talk about Ishmael and whatever ceremony he was doing at the beginning of the episode.
Perfect.
This is something from the books. And I don't want to be a, you know, oh, well, this is what it was like, blah, blah, blah. But this was something that I never was able to visualize until now. They are giving me a visualization that I was not really able to understand until seeing it here. They talk about the seal or the seals on the Dark One's prison, and that some were closer to the surface than others. And I didn't quite get it until they were talking about, like, because you see Ishmael in the beginning and he, you know, he is standing on a seal and he sees his, you know, his seal, the one where he was freed, above him using whatever spell or incantation or whatever it was to break through the seal he was standing on, which then revealed a person, a woman covered in blood. And so I give the show a lot of credit, because maybe this is exactly what Robert Jordan was trying to portray. The fact that it was like, I was like, I didn't quite get it until, oh, this makes way more sense. We're in these dark caverns and we're going from in these caves and we have to go find a seal and, you know, perform this particular incantation with this particular set of power and all that in order to release another. And so, like I said, I'm just giving the show and the producers and whatnot a lot of credit. I really liked the actor who portrayed Ishmael this episode. Like I thought that his intonation, the way that he spoke was, I thought it was great. And but I did see, you know, kind of like some of the outfit he was wearing when he was sitting across from Min. It was very much like businessman, very buttoned, yeah. literally buttoned up, very modern.
Yeah, definitely. I actually like rewound this and like entrance scene to watch it twice, because I was trying to tell, like, I couldn't even tell for sure that it was a woman at first. Mm-hmm. And I don't always pay the most attention to the episode title before I, like, as I start watching. And so I think, yeah, I was really confused about who it was. I was confused about whether we were under the seal that was broken when he was sort of there with Rand at that was the Eye of the World, or mm-hmm. if this was another one of the seals, like one of the ones that had the inscription on it that was passed off to Moraine. And if it's not, then is he going around to all these seals and releasing several Forsaken, or did he have to break several seals just to release the Daughter of the Night? Like, yeah, I still have a lot of questions about just understanding sort of the broader details of all of that.
All right, so here is what, now I have to go back and watch episode one of this season again, but it has been 6 months, 5 months since the Eye of the World, mm-hmm. right? I don't know when Bail Doman got that seal, but the key being is that Ishmael, I think what happened was that Ishmael put his vision, you know, in the Eye of the World and then used Rand to break his seal, to let him out. And okay. then shortly thereafter, he went and found Lanfear's seal, let Lanfear out. And okay. then shortly thereafter, Bail Doman comes into possession of the piece of Quindiar, and then it ends up getting passed to Moraine eventually. So Lanfear's been out and about for months.
Well, yeah.
established an inn in the Foregate in Kyrene. So the fact that we're seeing all of these things kind of out of order is interesting. I think it's really interesting. And it's the, you don't, like, I was thinking that it was possible that it was happening all around the same time, but it was obviously, I'll mention it when you get into the last thing. I did really like it. I thought it was really, really cool and really well done. And I can see the progression of what happened now. And I think that visually, yes, I have a little bit of background knowledge. Well, okay, I have a lot of background knowledge, and it's awesome seeing those things come to life in this on the screen. But I think they're making it easy enough for a non-book reader to follow.
Yeah. I have a lot of questions and I want to know more, just because I think I enjoy delving deeper into that lore stuff, and I want to know how all these seals work and, you know, all the ins and outs of how, you know, the source works and how Aes Sedai are trained and things. But I don't need to know all those details to follow the show, and they're definitely making it, I think, interesting and approachable without knowing all of those details.
Right.
All right.
All right.
Yeah. Are you ready?
Okay. Go ahead. I'm ready.
So obviously my last point is the reveal of the Daughter of the Night, who I spent part of the episode wondering if it was going to be Moiraine. I thought maybe it was going to be Leandrin when she started to act a little funny. I even suspected for a moment Alana when she was being so secretive about sneaking around behind Lan. I did not, and I feel really dumb when the reveal happened that I did not suspect, but I didn't, even as it was coming out that I started to suspect Celine was something other than what she had portrayed herself to be, I still didn't make the connection that she might be the person that we saw at the beginning until, like, you know, the
second
10 seconds before she's right. Revealing herself, and then I made it. So felt really pretty dumb on missing all the signs on that. I do have to just back up for 1 minute and tell you, if anyone ever invites you to their secret family cabin at somewhere named Kinslayer's Dagger, that is a red flag, and you say no. It's like she's talking about it like it's this idyllic place, and just nobody's batting an eye at Kinslayer's Dagger being the name of it. So that's my PSA. Don't go, even with a woman you've known for a while, to a secret cabin at Kinslayer's Dagger. Because it will turn out that she is a bloody demon of some sort, apparently. You know, I think we got a lot of reveals at the cabin of, you know, the attack of Rand by the, is it a Fade or a Shade? I keep calling it the wrong thing.
Fade.
Okay. By a Fade. And, you know, I really thought last episode that she, when they were doing it and he started, you know, like channeling and she said, I'm not afraid of you. I wasn't certain. I know we talked about it, but I really felt like she knew something was happening. And so then she acted so shocked when he took that Fade out and seemed to show real fear. And, you know, as the Fade had been attacking him, I was wondering, is she up to something? Like, is she in on this somehow? But then it seemed like this genuine fear when Rand is explaining that he can channel and that he's hid it from her. And so I did just keep wavering on whether I believed her, didn't believe her, suspected her. And then, you know, she pretty immediately calms down and sort of is like, well, it's okay that you lied to me and I get it and you should be yourself and you shouldn't resist channeling. And so then I was like, that's weird. Like, she's sort of just such quick emotional twists.
Like blasé about, oh, you're a man who can channel. Oh, all right.
But then she takes them again into her secret cabin, which, you know, she had revealed was not her family cabin, but where she had come with her previous lover, who was very powerful and very angry, I think. And she used a couple other things to describe him. And so, you know, when she was doing those things, I was suspecting her, like, well, was she with previous dragon or the, like, you know, the dark one or something like that?
Maybe Ishmael.
Rand decides, cool, I'll go into the cabin with you. Oh, sure. Tie me up. No big deal.
Well, he was kind of like, Celine, what? What's up with these,
I mean, he wasn't trying terribly hard to resist.
I mean, I
but
get
But yeah,
it.
He did act a little like, what? But he was okay with it. And then she starts to reveal herself. And I was really hoping we were going to get her morphing fully into her blood-covered form. But I was not disappointed when the sword came through her chest. So I'm okay. I'm hoping we will still get that. And I, you know, Rand was pretty angry, but Moiraine is always able to pull out that I'm not lying to you because I can't lie. And it always, that's like the magic line that she says to calm people down.
Yeah. So I will insert that it's possible that she's not bound by the three oaths anymore.
Oh.
Because if they were, if they are instilled by the power and she is cut off from the power, is she still bound? I don't know if that is true or not. But I mean, I'm willing to plant the seed. Is she actually still bound?
That's interesting. Yeah, maybe not, but it still worked. To calm
Rand
down because
yeah,
he doesn't
absolutely.
Know.
He doesn't know. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was pretty creepy that last shot of the daughter of the night / Celine blinking her eyes. It was pretty cool. I often have to I'll watch on my computer, and I'll have to page over the play button to see the character name and the actor name.
Mm-hmm.
Amazon like just will show you pretty easily. And I noticed, I couldn't remember if it was Celine or Serene as I was writing my final notes. And I did that and noticed that right during that scene, as she was revealed, it just changes to nothing. It just has the actress's name.
Oh, wow.
So it doesn't change to Lanfear, but Celine is taken away. And if I went back, like, you know, 2 minutes to right before the reveal and it still said Celine. So I thought that was just kind of a cool little detail.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah. That was, I thought it was really, really good. I mentioned that stilling, but then we also aren't sure if she's stilled or shielded by a male. So maybe she is still bound. I don't know. I just don't know. Yeah, that was, I mean, I thought it was really well done, and I am liking, I can never remember his damn name, but the actor who portrays Rand. I'm liking him more and more. And with every episode, I feel like he's kind of like showing more ability and more range. And I'm really, really digging Rand. But I got to admit that Celine is, I mean, she's stunning. And I'm looking forward to seeing more of her, not more of her, but, you know, just her in future scenes. But I am curious what kind of monster she is, or if she's just a dark friend who can channel or whatever.
Well, they specifically call her out as a Forsaken. Oh, so we can jump back. Do you want to read prophecy that I guess Alana read out? Because that does, they did say, I don't know if she said it in the full, in the beginning of the prophecy, they called her the Forsaken, which is something I think we've also heard Ishmael refer to himself.
Yep.
As.
He referred to himself as Forsaken. So I guess maybe I'll just, I don't know if we're supposed to know it or understand or whatever, but the Dark One had a number of basically acolytes or disciples. If you think of Jesus and his 12 apostles, the Dark One has a number of very, very powerful people who could channel. They were chosen by the Dark One to be his lieutenants. or his lieutenants.
I looked that up. Did you look it up too?
No, I didn't look it up, but I went back and watched it last episode, and she definitely says lieutenants, but then the subtitles say lieutenants.
So it's a British, it's just how British, it's like an old British pronunciation of lieutenant, because the U was more of a V sound.
Oh,
and so, okay. So yeah, apparently it's pretty common, but I didn't realize it was the same thing.
Not in America. I didn't put it word for word. It was something to the effects of daughter of the night. She walks again. The ancient war she still fights. She seeks a new lover who will serve her and die, yet serve still. The shining halls shall kneel. Blood follows blood. Blood calls blood. Blood is, and blood ever shall be. Something to that effect. I might have missed a line in there.
Pretty close.
But I thought it was well delivered. I thought it was Ivan who read it. I thought it was well delivered in that moment of reveal. And then the surprise sword from Moraine was pretty good. It was like,
yeah.
But going back, back to maybe Lanfear couldn't sense her because she can no longer channel. So again, I don't know if she's still, don't know if she's shielded, but the fact that she can't was actually to her advantage at this particular point.
Interesting. I hadn't thought about that. Well, and, you know, I guess you did reveal a little bit to us just that for sure that, well, no, I guess we saw her doing something. I guess I wasn't completely certain that what she was doing was channeling. I knew there was some sort of ripple of something going around her body, but I wasn't completely sure.
It gave me a very Species vibe.
Yeah.
Where, you know, she's on top of a dude and like spikes start coming out of her back. And I was just like, what is happening?
I don't think I asked this earlier. When they, you know, were hiding from Lan and reading the prophecy, they specifically said Lan must not know who it is about. Why do you think it was so important that Lan didn't know? Because he would.
I think what they were saying is he not, we can't tell him. He must not know who it's about, because if he did, he'd be following Moiraine, trying to find Moiraine to the ends of the earth to protect her.
Okay. I thought they were saying like, he must not know. Like, we must not tell him.
Although it could be like that too. But like the way that I, listening to it again, I think that the delivery was a little weird, because it definitely sounded like it's like, oh, we can't tell him. But then I'm like using the words, oh, he must not know. So I think maybe there was a little bit of a glitch on that delivery.
That would make more sense.
All right. Anything else?
I don't think so.
All right. Let's hop into notes. So I am going to just talk a little bit about Leandrin and Leanne. So Leanne being the keeper.
Oh, yeah.
But the keeper who is also the Amaryllin when the Amaryllin's away. And I meant to mention this when I was talking about Leandrin, but it was just so much. So she talks about, like, she's basically like challenging Leanne, like, hey, there's an invasion over here. When's the last time? You know, are we even going to send anybody? We did send sisters. When was the last time they reported in? It's like, okay, Leander, do you know more than you're letting on? Like, are you just playing the game of houses in the White Tower? Leandrin, you know, oh, when was the last time you spoke to the Amaryllin? So Swan Sanche is away. She is not around. And we don't know how long it's been. So where is the Amaryllin? And so I think that's an interesting question. Then Leandrin said, if she goes down, you'll go with her. Like, you can't save yourself if you are, you know, allying yourself with Swan. So I was like, well, still kind of bitchy.
Yeah. I really loved the line that Leanne said of, I speak with her every day because I am her when she is away.
Right.
I thought that was pretty good. I am really curious to know where the Amberlynn is and to understand if Leandrin's threat was directly about falling with the Amberlynn or if it was about that they're all in league sort of with Moraine. I don't know. Leandrin obviously seems to have a much more comprehensive view of a lot of things that are moving than it seems like some of the characters do. Right. It's because she's, you know, basically a double agent.
Right. So what has she been fed by?
Yeah.
Assuming that she is a dark friend and she knew who she was working for and she was, you know, delivering Matt to Kyrene. It's going to take me so long to get used to saying it that way.
I know.
It's definitely interesting.
One thing that I was sort of piecing together as just a theory from sort of all these storylines, and this might be like too wild, and I'm sure you probably can't say a lot since you might know, but part of the prophecy was that she seeks a new lover and who shall serve her and die and yet serve her still. And so, you know, I'm assuming that Celine / the Daughter of the Night was seeking out Rand as her new powerful lover. And it seems like my theory on the whole thing with Leandrin sort of sending Matt into the hands of Ishmael is that Min has seen that Matt is going to kill Rand. And so I'm just sort of wondering, maybe that storyline does play out, but maybe Rand dying, he doesn't really die. Just based on that little prophecy. So I'm curious to see if that happens. I don't know if it'll happen by the end of the season, but I'm curious if we'll find out if that's how that's all going to play out.
And this is what happens when you podcast on things. You start digging, digging deep, and you're like, what does this mean? And what does that mean? All right. Anything else?
A really small thing, but I just really loved that our reintroduction to our brief little view of Matt. Before the picture even came up on the screen, you just heard the roll of dice. And you knew before you saw him that what was going to come was going to be a scene with Matt because there was dice involved. And I was not disappointed, but I just thought that was a fun little tidbit that they sort of led with the sound first. And I guess that's Matt's ringtone. That was my last point.
Okay. All right. In that case, we'll take a break and we'll get into some news. And let me see. I'm going to listen to the wind. And I think maybe we'll have ads for maybe a casino and then maybe some local business and then some sort of cleaning product. Maybe. Oh, you know what? Probably a podcast. All right. Prophecy has been given. Ah, welcome back. I hope that you guys can let us know if we were right on the types of ads that you guys heard. Maybe we'll be right. Maybe we're not. That's just kind of the way that the wind goes sometimes. But now, moving on to, we finally have some news about the Wheel of Time. Veronica.
Awesome. So now that we are caught up on the episodes, Greg was actually able to go do a little research and pull together some interesting tidbits. So first up, I have something from the Wheel of Time on Twitter/X. So they say, we know a lot of you are missing the amazing opening credits from last season, but part of it came down to, do we want the opening credits or more show? And we thought you might choose the latter. And, you know, I agree. I'm not a big fan of long intros. I can definitely appreciate like the artistic value of it, but I have enjoyed a very quick intro this season. What do you think, Greg?
I really dig it. I dig the visual, and if you can give me an extra 2 minutes of content, I will take that over the same opening credits every time. You know, Game of Thrones did a really good job of shifting it from episode to episode. That probably cost a lot of money, but I will absolutely take a couple extra minutes of content. 100%.
Absolutely. What else do you have for us in news?
So there was an article on Nerdist, and actually, like, there's a bunch of stuff out there, and I just didn't want to like pile down a bunch of stuff, but we were talking about LAN earlier. But this from Nerdist by Amy Ratcliffe, talking about LAN out and in his kind of like his lightheartedness or lighter heartedness. So they say, while visiting a lot of his family, LAN seemed to relax. He let his hair down, though it's shorter than it was in 98's possible future, and more comfortable looking clothing. The hair, at least, is symbolic of LAN and Moraine's lack of relationship. The Wheel of Time's hair and makeup designer, Davina Lamont, told Nerdist it was about representing that change in his character. It was about how Moiraine and LAN had gone to another place, he said. Moiraine was kicked out of the White Tower, and so we had more of a relaxed look for both of them in the first episode. Then they wanted to see LAN in an even more relaxed mode as well. So for that, it was taking his hair down. It was great to play with the length and the style for him and what that would look like. So yeah, I was glad he got a new hairstyle. Daniel Hennig loves his long hair. The director of this episode, Thomas Knapper, told Nerdist more about Moiraine and LAN's struggle. The pair is in crisis, complicated by Moiraine shutting LAN out. He said, "Their relationship is a strange, broken place where they are almost like twins to a point. It's so interesting to explore these other aspects of the characters that I felt coming to the show fresh for series two was it that was a really new aspect of the show, is to see the vulnerability and to see, I guess, the darker sides." Yes, absolutely. I really thought that was a very good summation of how their relationship almost drives both of them, or their lack of relationship, or how that's kind of tearing them apart.
Yeah, I mean, I think, LAN looks great with his hair down, don't get me wrong. I love it. But, when he's with Moiraine, he is her warder. He is always ready to sort of be there for her, to protect her, to aid her. And I think the hair up sort of shows that he's ready for action, and the hair down is sort of, he is calmer, but he's also, what's his purpose right now, right? Like, what is he living for? And so I'm was disappointed that he didn't want to go to the White Tower and go be a warder for Nynaeve, but I don't think that's the quite the time in the story for that type of happy ending. So
Yeah,
I'm
that's
okay
not his
with it,
path.
but yeah.
All right, so I'm going to implore you guys to go ahead and send us some responses. I swear I really am going to get on Friday, as soon as the episode drops, I'm going to put up a post, and hopefully you guys can comment on it, send us some feedback or whatever. Not a, or whatever. Death. Yes, send us some feedback. But if you'd like to write in or record a message and send it in, you can email it to talk@podcasting.com.
You can check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/podcastica.
And we're also on X at Podcastica. I know that they just let out the first episode of Daryl Dixon on
Yes.
the cast of us.
They did it all in French completely.
Oh man.
No,
That
I'm
would
just
be
kidding.
I actually haven't watched the episode yet. I've just been so slammed with a bunch of different things. Yeah, they got that. Then I think they put you said they pushed off White Lotus season two until next week.
Yeah, I think it'll be next week.
And then I believe there was one other one that I saw that was, oh, Ahsoka is going pretty strong. And I haven't been able to watch any of that. I haven't watched the first episode yet, and I'm super disappointed in myself.
That's a show I'm very excited about. I love the hosts that are covering it, and I just haven't had time to dive into it yet, but I think a binge is in my very near future.
Yeah, I think at some point I'm going to be able to like just say, okay, screw it. I'm gonna go watch maybe once the show finishes or the series finishes, I'll be able to go back and watch it, and then go listen to Jonathan and James cover that. It's Jonathan and James, right?
Yeah, and who else is doing it with them?
Is it Kara? I don't remember.
I
Anyway.
don't remember. There is another lady doing it with them though, which I was excited to have a lady's voice on a Star Wars podcast because they've been pretty male dominated, and I'm a big Star Wars fan, and I know lots of other female Star Wars fans, so it's good to, I'm excited to have that in the mix.
Nice. And I do know that Still Slang is a Buffy rewatch. I was never a Buffy fan, but I know that a lot of people, it was a seminal work in their either teens or 20s. I know Penny was super excited about doing that.
Awesome.
But next time on this podcast, Wheel of Time, Season 2, Episode 5, ? We'll put that out whenever it comes out. So I look forward to watching that on Friday morning.
Awesome. Well, I think that's our show then.
All right. Let the dragon ride again on the winds of time. See ya.
Why is life better with American Family Insurance? Because every policy comes with something very special. A trusted agent who's there to help protect your dreams by finding the right coverage at the right price. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.